You bitten on me? It's time to get a check, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm Jordan in the clutch, boy. You bitten on me? It's time to get a check, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about?
Alrighty, guys, it is time for another episode of the Auto Bid. I am Aaron Robinson, joined by my twin brother Andrew Robinson. And as always, we are here to give you the latest in the world of mid-majors. Obviously, it is NCAA tournament time, so we're going to be talking about a couple of the mid-majors that are still alive in this tournament, and Oral Roberts and Loyola Chicago, and recapping a wild first weekend that saw everyone's bracket get absolutely obliterated. And also, we're going to have Kim English interview as he was named as the 11th head coach in the history of George Mason University. So we're going to get you guys to an interview with him later on as we sat down with the new head coach. But first, Andrew, man, this weekend was wild, man. What are your thoughts from this first weekend, man?
Hey, man, absolute pandemonium. But we knew this was going to happen. No surprises, you know. The highlight of my weekend was proving you wrong, of course. And your Oklahoma State and Liberty prediction. You know, I told you what Kay Cunningham was going to do. I told you that it wasn't going to be enough, you know, for Liberty to pull off the upset. So I'm going to be waiting for you to go ahead and give that public apology that we're waiting for, you know. But that was the highlight of my weekend, you know, outside of the plethora of mid-major games that took place and programs, you know. Proving you wrong is always a highlight of my week.
Yeah, Andrew, I think, you know, Kay Cunningham, I believe he was 3-for-15, I want to say, in that game or something. Matter of fact, let me put up the box score. I have it right here. Cade Cunningham, 3-for-14 shooting, 2-of-8 from three. So, you know, I think Liberty did do a great job guarding him like I said that they would, you know. Obviously, the end of that game, they let him play a little bit too much one-on-one basketball. You know, they let him
– 9 straight points.
You know, hey, look, I don't know why they got away from what they were doing the whole game. They weren't really letting him get downhill. Yeah, at one point, through that first half, you know, and then they let him score 14 points in the second half, the last 9 of the game. I mean, I don't really know, you know, why they were letting him play one-on-one there. But, hey, man, it is what it is. Liberty put up a very, very valiant fight. You know, I don't want to slight them at all. But, you know, Kate Cunningham, at the end of the day, he wasn't the reason why they won. He was not the reason why they won. They won despite the fact that he shot 3-for-14 from the floor. Shout out to Avery Anderson. I mean, before we talked about him, you know, having to come up big in order for Oklahoma State to win that game. And he scored 21.7 rebounds, you know.
I knew he would.
He played well, you know. But it wasn't because of Cade Cunningham, as you were trying to make it seem like he was going to go out there and just do what he wanted or when he wanted. That didn't happen. It didn't happen. He scored 15 points on 3-of-14 shooting, so, yeah.
9 straight points to end the game. I told you guys on the
– from the free throw line.
Hey, listen, he put the ball in the basket. They couldn't stop him. He was getting downhill.
He's had three field goals the entire game.
Hey, listen, like I said.
Three field goals the entire game.
From the right wing, you know, 9 straight points to end the game. You know, like I said, man, if the game was close, like I told you guys, the game was close, Kay was going to take over and end it. He did. And the most important stat of them all is the W. Oklahoma State came out on top. So, you know, like I said, man, I'm waiting for you to make your public apology, you know, acknowledging this feat, you know, but there were tons of other games that, you know, garnered tons of excitement. So, you know, how about you, man? What do you think was the most surprising result of the weekend?
I think the most surprising result was Abilene Christian defeating Texas. I mean, I think that was probably the one that surprised the most people because just when you look at that game and the athletes that Texas has, I mean, they're littered with first-round NBA talent, seniors. I mean, this was the most talented Texas team had probably since Kevin Durant was in a Longhorn uniform, man. And they only scored 52 points versus an Abilene Christian team out of the Southland that on paper just looked outmatched. But, I mean, you hold Texas to 52 points. I mean, they couldn't really get anything going offensively, man. Only shot the ball 40 times, turned the ball over 23 times. I mean, That is absolutely unbelievable for a Big 12 team to struggle that much, turn the ball over 23 times against an Abilene Christian team, man. That's really good. You know, I don't want to slight them, but, you know, it was a typical Dave versus Goliath matchup, not even necessarily with the seeding, but just when you look at these teams on the court, I mean, Texas, their front line is huge. Their guards are huge, man. And Abilene Christian still somehow found a way to get it done despite themselves shooting just 30% from the floor. I mean, they shot 20 for 67 from the floor, 30%, 3 for 18 from 3, 16%, and they won this game. That is absolutely astounding. I mean, I don't know how, you know, they got it done, but, I mean, hey, it's March and strange things happen, and that was definitely the most surprising thing for me to see this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, they were able to do it because, like you mentioned before, I mean, they forced Texas into 23 turnovers. You know, Texas had 23 turnovers. Abilene only had 11. You know, so, you know, when you're getting more shots at the rim, you know, that tends to happen. You know, Texas didn't necessarily have a bad offensive night when it comes to shooting. You know, they shot 45%. You know, they only made 18 field goals. It's crazy because, you know, Abilene Christian shot 27 more shots than them. You know, Abilene Christian shot 67 shots, and Texas only shot 40 shots. So, like, when you turn the ball over, you know, that happens. I mean, it's hard when you're not getting shots up at the basket. You know, also, Abilene Christian had 18 offensive rebounds. I mean, this is a mid-major team. Like, 18 offensive rebounds. And this is a Texas team that has Kai Jones, Greg Brown, Jericho Sims. I mean, no shortage of big guys. You know, they only have 5 offensive rebounds the entire game. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, Abilene Christian just wanted it more, quite frankly. You know, I mean, it's crazy when a Big 12 team gets out-rebounded by 21. You know, so, like, 21. They get out-rebounded 36 to 15. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, it's – oh, no, excuse me. Texas had 31 rebounds. Oh, no, that's my fault. I rebounded by 5.
Plus 5 on the glass.
Plus 5. Yeah. Even though plus 5 on the glass, you know, you give up 18 offensive rebounds, and you turn the ball over 23 times. You can't be anybody doing that, because it's not like this is, you know, a non-conference. I mean, this is the NCAA tournament. You know, this is the team in Abilene Christian that, you know, won, you know, their conference championship. You know, and head coach Joe Golding is a rising star. He's done a great job with this program. I think they've only been Division I for like 8 years. You know, but Texas just picked the wrong night to have their worst game of the season, literally. I mean, my heart goes up to Shaka Smart, because he's had some brutal first round exits in the round of 64 at Texas. You know, lost on that half court bank shot, you know, last time around. And I mean, I think that this is a Texas team that a lot of people had advancing pretty far in the tournament, you know, but obviously Abilene Christian had other ideas. It's crazy because, you know, when we look at the upsets, you know, for this week, obviously we had Ohio over Virginia, you know, North Texas over Purdue, and obviously Oral Roberts over Ohio State. Like, Ohio versus UVA, we pretty much penciled that in last Selection Sunday. We knew that was going to happen. No, Texas over Purdue was another one that we penciled in last week on the last week's episode. Like, that wasn't really a surprise. The two most surprising ones was obviously Oral Roberts over Ohio State and Abilene over Texas. But with Oral Roberts, you know, Ohio State was without Kyle Young, so we knew that they weren't really going to be at full strength because, you know, obviously he was out with the concussion. But then Oral Roberts also has two guys who are averaging about 30 a game in the NCAA tournament. They've been the highest – they were the highest scoring duo in the country in the regular season, and they've upped that even more, and now they're the highest scoring duo in the NCAA tournament as well. So when we look down the line of, you know, mid-majors that have been able to advance in the tournament, you know, they always have those guys that they can go to score and put the ball in the basket. And, you know, Oral Roberts was able to do that. You know, head coach, you know, Paul Mills, you know, did a great job with those guys. Obviously, they're in the Sweet 16 now, clearly. But I think, you know, Abilene Christian, I don't think anybody really had that game, you know, in their brackets, man. That was like the late game, you know, last game of the night. My guy Joe Pleasant, you know, came in, knocked down the two biggest free throws of his career. You know, we're watching the broadcast and they say, I don't know, man. I don't know if he's going to be able to knock me down. You know, the guy shoots 46%. You know, from the free throw line, you know, on the year, something like 60, I think it was 59% actually from the free throw line. You know, you step up, a guy shooting less than 60% from the line has to make 2 to win. You're down one. And he cans both of them, you know, in the biggest moment of his life. They said, you know, he also made 2 free throws to win his high school state title, you know, before he even got to college. So apparently this guy just a, you know, big shot maker. You know, the ones in the middle of the game, he probably doesn't really care about, but hey, when the game's on the line, you know, I think I might like Joe Pleasant over the field for free throw line.
Yeah, man. I mean, we talked about that all March, you know, with, even back to Mount St. Mary's. Well, they're big guys. They had a couple guys, I think Nana, I think Messi. Both of those guys were, I think, career, or this season was shooting like 50-some percent from the free throw line. Both of those guys went to the line, knocked out some huge shots for Mount St. Mary's to win the NEC championship. And then my guy Joe Pleasant, obviously did it on the biggest stage of them all. You know, hey, man, the percentages don't matter, man. When you step up to that line, either you want the ball in your hands or you don't. And some guys do and some guys don't. And my guy Pleasant won the ball in his hands in that moment, and he delivered, man. But
hey, shout out to my guy Trey Fields, man. He said, hey, I threw up his free throw percentage. He was like, hey, man. He's like, you can't measure ice water in the veins.
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you.
That with a set.
You can't at all, man. You mentioned Oral Roberts, man. And I want to talk a lot about this team because, yes, it was a surprising upset just because of the seed, but Oral Roberts is a great, great basketball team. And I mean, yes, they finished fourth in the Summer League and they were able to win the conference tournament. But this team is elite offensive team. And I mean, they're a top 50 team in tempo. They're averaging about 71.5 possessions per 40 minutes, which is 46 right now in the entire country in Division I basketball. They're averaging about 82 points per game in their last seven games. I mean, they can score with the best of them. As a team, they shoot 40% from three. They space you out. Kevin O'Banner is a star. Max A. Smith is a star. You mentioned, I mean, regular season, they were averaging about 42 points between the two of them. They've upped that to about 56 points per game between the two of those guys in these two games. Obviously, game one, O'Banner goes for 30. A. Smith goes for 29. And then game two, I believe A. Smith had 26,
I believe. 26, and O'Banner had 28.
Yeah, I mean, these dudes, they're going 30 for 30 every night, man. I mean, it's unbelievable what those two guys are doing, man. I mean, those guys are single-handedly carrying Oral Roberts right now. I mean, those two could play at any team, any school in the country, man. I mean, they can shoot it. They can get to the basket. Oral Roberts is extremely hard to guard. When you talk about just trying to slow them down because they play so fast and they play so free offensively and all five guys in the court can shoot, man. They're going to be a tough out next round when they play Arkansas. I think that they can beat Arkansas just because of the fact that stylistically, I think they match up really well because Arkansas wants to get out and run too. I mean, Arkansas is 17th in the country in tempo. They're averaging about 73 possessions per 40 minutes. Like I said before, Oral Roberts is about 71.5 possessions per 40 minutes. So both of them wanted to be a track meet. So at that point, is who makes more shots? You know what I'm saying? And obviously, Oral Roberts, like I said, they're averaging 82 points per game over their last seven games, obviously all wins. So, I mean, hey, I'm not betting against Oral Roberts to knock off Arkansas and reach the Elite Eight, where they would face Scott Drew and the Baylor Bears. Well, they're going to beat Villanova, but I think Baylor advanced over Villanova without Colin Gillespie. And you get Scott Drew, you get Paul Mills, the reunion of a Baylor. You know, of course, obviously Paul Mills was assistant for years under Scott Drew at Baylor. And obviously the head coach at Oral Roberts now doing an outstanding job. So, I think we're going to see a Baylor reunion in the Elite Eight between Scott Drew and Paul Mills after Oral Roberts knocks off Arkansas.
You're predicting that. You're going on the record.
I'm going on the record, and I'm calling Oral Roberts over Arkansas to the Elite Eight.
Yeah, Ace, I admire your enthusiasm on this one. But, you know, I think Oral Roberts has made a great run. You know, they're only the second 15 seed ever to make a Sweet 16, you know, obviously, the first 15 seed was Florida Gulf Coast and, you know, Andy Anfield, those guys, and Dunk City a few years back. But just like FGC, I think we have come to the end of the road for Oral Roberts. I think Arkansas is going to be too big, too physical. I think that we Arkansas got down to Colgate early and everybody started panicking. And then they threw that press on Colgate and the game completely changed. They went on a 17-0 run. I think the difference between Arkansas and Florida per se is that, you know, obviously Florida has a big fella, you know, Castleton. He's a tough matchup, you know, for O'Banner and those guys that are stepping out. The thing with Arkansas is that they can go small. You know, they can obviously, you know, we know the master problem that Moses Moody is, but you can go Justin Smith, you know, throw him at the five, and now you're playing five out. And they can switch all those ball screens. So it's going to be a lot easier for teams to defend. And Oral Roberts is going to be able to get all those pick and pop threes. Because if Arkansas goes with Justin Smith at the five, he can guard any of those guys on the perimeter. Obviously down low, you know, they're physical, he's big, strong, 6'7", 230. You know, so I think that Arkansas has the ability to match up with those guys. And I think that when you compare the athletic ability and just the ability that Arkansas has to just explode for points, I think that Arkansas is going to provide a unique challenge when you know comparison to Ohio State and what Florida could do.
Hey man, look, I respect your opinion. You know, I think you know it's going to be an interesting matchup. I think Arkansas, look, it's going to come down to who makes the most shots because there it's going to be a track meet. And you talk about pressing. I think you press Oral Roberts if you want to. They're going to be throwing the ball up the court getting threes. H. Miller ain't turning the ball over. And if you obviously if you're pressing, you're at least up vulnerable on the backside. You can get the ball over the top. So if they press Oral Roberts, I don't think that's going to necessarily go in their best favor because then it's going to be Oral Roberts going to be raining threes all game long. You know, obviously my guy H. Smith has logo range. So I don't think you want to play that game with Oral Roberts. You know, I think their best bet is probably just trying to guard him in the half court. Like you said, switch everything. You know, go 5-0 with Justin Smith to try to switch their ball screens and try to you know get into him and be physical with him up front. I listened to a podcast. Jeff Goodman. I was in the Field of 68. They had the South Dakota State head coach on there, and he was talking about Oral Roberts and was warning everybody before the tournament started about how hard they are to guard and about how good H. Smith was and Kevin O'Banner was and the reason why they could pose a threat, you know, because of the way they play offensively. But what he did say is that a team that has an imposing five could be an issue for them. And obviously thought it was going to be Castleton with Florida, but they were able to get by Florida because obviously he struggled guarding O'Banner on the perimeter. So I think, you know, Arkansas' best bet is probably just try to go small and switch everything, you know, and then hope that your guys can win that matchup. Hope that Smith can win that matchup against O'Banner. But, I mean, O'Banner, in my opinion, is as good as any player in the country right now. So, I mean, I think you can legitimately say that you know, Oral Roberts is going to have the better player at two positions out of the five on the court when they play Arkansas.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see, man, you know. Turn the gears a little bit to the other Sweet 16 matchup that's going to feature one of the majors that we've talked about a lot on this show is Loyola Chicago. And they're going to see Oregon State, you know, after, you know, advancing to a Sweet 16 and, you know, some will call an upset what they did over Illinois in that 8-1 game. Obviously, advancing out of that first round over Georgia Tech, who was without ACC Player of the Year and Moses Wright. But they're back. You know, they're in the Sweet 16 for a second time in 4 years, I want to say. Second time in 4 years, obviously Cameron Crutwig, Lucas Williamson, you know, were freshmen on that Final Four team. You know, they're now back in the Sweet 16, and they're going to face Oregon State, where they're actually a 7-point favorite in the Sweet 16 matchup, which is crazy for a Sweet 16 matchup to be favored, you know, against a Pac-12 conference champion and be favored by 7.5 points. You know, so, I mean, what are your thoughts on that matchup, you know, on what Chicago has been able to do thus far in the tournament and you know, how they'll fare, you know, this weekend against Oregon State?
I mean, listen, I feel so bad for Illinois because the tournament, I mean, they screwed Illinois. Loyola Chicago was grossly underseeded. There is no way in hell they should have been an 8 seed. Every metric has them in the top 10. They're 9 in KenPom. They're 10 in the net. They're the number one team in the country in defensive efficiency per KenPom. I mean, you can't tell me that this team is an 8 seed. Like, there's no way that this team should have been an 8 seed. They are one of, in my opinion, probably the best. They're proving it right now that they're one of the best probably 10 teams in the country. I think they're going to advance to the Elite Eight on Saturday when they play Oregon State, obviously. But, I mean, they're, like I said, man, they're the best defensive team in America per KenPom. Defensive efficiency, I mean, these guys are precise. They're surgical on offense. The way they run that Princeton offense, man, Kevin Krobig obviously being the catalyst. He's so good because he can do so many different things. You know, he can guard big guys. You know, they've been on the other end when a guy like Kofi has to come out there and guard him on the perimeter. And it really – big guys don't necessarily want to come out there and guard him on the perimeter, man. So they're hard to guard offensively and they're stingy defensively. And we all know Porter Moser is one of the best coaches in the country. So they're tough out, man. Like I said, I don't know how the heck they were an 8 seed. You know, kudos to Vegas, I guess, for putting some respect on their name and putting them as a 7-point favorite. You know, but I think it's about time somebody put some respect on these dudes' name.
Now, for real, man, it's crazy, you know, because I mean, this is a mid-major podcast, but you know, Oregon State has pulled off an improbable run in March in their own right. Obviously, winning the Pac-12 as a 5 seed, you know, upsetting Tennessee in that first game, and then upsetting Kay Cunningham and Oklahoma State Cowboys in the round 32 to make it in the Sweet 16. And the odds are going to be stacked against them yet again in this Sweet 16 matchup against Loyola Chicago. But I don't know, man. It's setting up for a fun couple weeks because if Loyola Chicago were to advance, then I mean, they're going to see the winner of the Syracuse and Houston game, which will make for an amazing, amazing Elite Eight. But I think that, you know, when we're talking about these mid-majors, man, I mean, I don't want to go without mentioning, you know, Ohio, who also had a great run. Obviously, they beat Virginia in that first round matchup and, you know, just couldn't put it together for 40 minutes against Creighton. Creighton pretty much took it to him in that matchup. Jason Preston had a wonderful first game, 11 points, 13 rebounds, 8 assists. Struggled a lot in that second game, but, you know, hell of a job for, you know, Coach Jeff Bowles getting Ohio, you know, back in the NCAA tournament, you know, and being able to win a game in the NCAA tournament as well. Also, North Texas being able to get Purdue in that first round and then, you know, ultimately falling to Villanova. I think, you know, if nothing else, I think that this year's tournament really has opened a lot of people's eyes, man. I mean, obviously there's no Duke in the NCAA tournament, no Kentucky in the NCAA tournament. You know, Kansas gets blown out by 30 by USC. I think it's really, you know, showing a changing of the guard in college basketball, man. I mean, obviously we have Oral Roberts in the Sweet 16. Loyola Chicago's in their second Sweet 16 in the last 4 years. I mean, I think there's a shift. You know, there's a shift going on in college basketball right now. When we look around the landscape, you know, Alabama's a 2 seed. You know, Arkansas's right there. You know, Baylor. We have a lot of programs who, you know, aren't traditionally, you know, recognized in that level. I mean, and they're making a lot of noise, you know. So I definitely want to give kudos to those programs, man, for having a stellar, stellar opening weekend. And I think it's going to be even more fun, you know, this weekend in the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight rounds.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, obviously, you know, this is a mid-major podcast, and most people wouldn't consider Gonzaga a mid-major, but they are. You know, they're the number one team in the country right now, number one seed in the tournament. They're, you know, going to see Creighton this weekend. Speaking of Creighton, one upset that I'm surprised didn't happen was UC Santa Barbara over Creighton. I mean, they escaped Santa Barbara in that first round. I was able to watch that game, and I mean, I thought UC Santa Barbara had won the whole game. I mean, there were times where obviously they were trailing. I'm like, all right, they're going to find a way to win this game, and they had chances down the stretch. They had a shot to win it at the end, man. I believe they might have had 2 shots at the end, man, and just couldn't get it done, man. But Creighton, you know, despite what everybody said about them, they find themselves in the Sweet 16, and they've earned their right to play Gonzaga. And people, I keep hearing, you know, everybody talking about how this is supposed to be a good game, and Creighton, if they make, I don't think it's going to be a good game. Personally, I mean, I don't see. I see this as, I'm gonna say it's no contest, but Gonzaga should win this game comfortably, in my opinion. Like, I don't think they'll sweat this round against Creighton, you know. But man, yeah, like I said, man, Santa Barbara. I was surprised that they didn't pull that game off against Creighton, man. But like I said, lo and behold, man, we're here. Gonzaga, best mid-major in the country, looking like they're gonna ready to walk to an Elite Eight, where I think they'll see Oregon. And I think Oregon give them a run for their money. I think they beat Oregon, but definitely single-digit game, 2-3 possessions, maybe 2 possessions, like single-digit game for sure. Guarantee it in that Elite Eight if Oregon gets there, which I believe they will, over USC.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree more. Gonzaga's going to walk to the Final Four. I don't think Creighton's going to give them any run for their money. Oregon not going to give them run for their money. I think we're going to see a similar situation to what we saw in Oregon's last game versus Iowa, where it was a great game in the first half. You know, Iowa was right with them. You know, people were thinking, oh, it's going to be a photo finish. Second half, Oregon blew doors off the game, and it wasn't close. And this is what I'm predicting in this game. I think Oregon is talented. You know, obviously they have LJ Figueroa, Chris Duarte. They have a lot of talented guys over there. Obviously, Coach Dana Altman is a great coach. Been to the Final Four. Have a ton of pedigree over there. But Gonzaga is the best team in the country. So I think that when it comes to the second half, they're going to blow this game wide open. And I see a double-digit win by Gonzaga. Moving on to the Final Four.
Yeah, man. We'll see what happens, man. You have your picks. I think we're gonna see what's gonna happen, man. I didn't want to throw this out there. I would love to see a Gonzaga, Alabama, Baylor, Loyola Chicago Final Four. I would love to see that. Gonzaga and Alabama would be a game for the ages. Nate Oates and Mark Few. I mean, that Alabama team is extremely fun to watch. And then obviously, Baylor and Loyola Chicago, two of the best defensive teams in the country, would be a rock fight, first to 50 Two outstanding coaches in Scott Drew and Porter Moses. That's my wish list for the Final Four. I hope that it comes true. So, to the basketball guys, if you hear me right now, you know, can we get a Gonzaga, Alabama, Baylor, Little Chicago Final Four? I wouldn't mind to see Michigan there if they're healthy. But I don't think that Michigan without Isaiah Livers is going to be able to give Gonzaga a run for their money. I think Alabama can that would be a game. That would probably be one of the best games we've seen in a while that they match up, in my opinion.
Well, don't count out Syracuse, man. Those Orange men with that 2-3 zone, man. They're in the Sweet 16. They're going to see Houston, a team who doesn't particularly shoot it well. They're a great offensive rebounding team. Shout out to Justin Gorham, a DMV native, man. Kevin Sampson did an amazing job with that program. But, you know, the zone has caused a lot of teams problems thus far in this tournament. And I think that they can get past Houston and get to that Elite Eight. You have a team in Lower Chicago and Syracuse. Obviously, Lower Chicago has seen a 2-3 zone like that all season. You know, so I think it'll be an interesting contrast of styles there, to where, you know, Syracuse might be able to sneak back to the Final Four under Boeheim as an 11th seed yet again.
For sure, man. Also, you know, want to root for – also room for Kevin Samuels, man, black coach. We all want to root for the black brother, man. One moment to go ahead and get to that Final Four, man. So we would love to see Kevin Sampson get Houston, you know, back to the Fire Slammer Jammer days, back to that Final Four, man. So definitely going to be rooting for him as well.
For sure, man. We will see what happens this weekend, you know. But without further ado, man, like we mentioned in the beginning of this podcast, we have a new head men's basketball coach at George Mason. It is none other than Baltimore native Kim English, who obviously, you know, is just a stellar basketball player, you know, and from a playing perspective, from his playing days at Missouri, all-time leader in wins there at Missouri over 4 years. Went to the tournament all 4 years at Missouri, played on some great teams. I remember that team with him and Phil Prussy. Fun to watch, played in the NBA for the Pistons, played some time, you know, spent some time overseas, you know, got into coaching, started at Tulsa, then, you know, went to Colorado under Todd Boyle, and, you know, at Tennessee for the last 2 years with Coach Rick Barnes, was just named the 11th head men's basketball coach at George Mason at the ripe age of 32. So we had a chance to sit down with Coach English today, and we're going to get you guys over to that interview right now.
All righty, guys. All Facts Media here live with the new George Mason head coach, Kim English. So first of all, congratulations on the gig coach. Obviously, for you, you know, it's been a short ride. I mean, obviously, you got your first head coaching job in 2015 for a coach that you played for and Frank Haith. And then, obviously, 6 years later, you know, you're a head coach. So talk to me a little bit about your journey from transitioning from a player to a coach and now being here, head coach at George Mason.
Once my career in the NBA ended, I quickly realized that I wanted to get into coaching. And I started reaching out to Coach Haith. From Europe, I actually started doing scouting reports. While I was playing professionally in Europe, I would get home to my apartment and I would watch an opponent and send him a scouting report. I actually remember doing one for Coach Paulson's Bucknell team in 2013 or 14 in Columbia, Missouri. And so he knew that I was serious and I wanted to do it. I started to familiarize myself with the 2016 and 17 recruiting classes. Like, think about where I had relationships in Maryland or Missouri or in New England, where I went to prep school, or Detroit. Like, I try to use my relationships and places that I've been to try to, you know, build my relationships, you know, build my recruiting network, rather. And I did it. And Coach Haith thankfully gave my first opportunity. And I worked incredibly hard for him. He moved me to assistant coach. Coach Boyle, Colorado, I was just watching a game at Boo Williams, minding my business. And he came and sat next to me. We just started talking. And he lost an assistant coach. He hired me. Same thing with Coach Barnes. Coach Haith worked for Coach Barnes at Texas. And I'd go out to dinner with Coach Barnes on the road, and we were in recruiting in the summer. And we got a relationship, and he gave me a great opportunity at Tennessee. And two awesome years at Tennessee. COVID year was crazy last year, but a really talented team this past season. A lot of ups and downs because of COVID, like everyone in the country. But really fortunate, happy to be sitting here today.
Now, obviously, me and my brother, being local guys here, a lot has been said recently in the media about local schools, Maryland, Georgetown, and the recruiting. You know, for example, Maryland, Auto came out today, actually, they haven't signed a guy from DeMatha in over 20 years. And a lot's been said about the program being able to get local guys to stay home.
for you. What are you going to do to be able to kind of get these little guys to stay home at George Mason and kind of, you know, that Final Four team with Fallon Campbell and Tony Skinner and our guys from the area?
Will Thomas, Baltimore, Jai Lewis, yeah. Lamar Butler. I mean, yeah. Where Lamar went? He went to Oxon Hill?
He was from here as well.
Lamar went to Oxon Hill. It's critically important. Like, it's the lifeblood of our program, right? Player acquisition is so important. Like, our culture, recruiting, and scheduling. Culture, recruiting, scheduling. It's an every single day thing. I told our staff today, we're gonna meet every single day on recruiting. Every single day we're meeting on recruiting. Where are we with prospects? Who is this kid? Let's get involved. Who's around him? What do we know? Like, it's the lifeblood of our program, and we're slap dab in the middle of the best in the world. The best prep prospects in the world are all within a 50-mile, 60-mile radius of right here. That is a blessing. It's so exciting that we can practice and get in a car and go watch a high school game, and then get in a car and go watch another high school game. Hey, coach, you having a morning workout? Cool, go to morning workout. Come back to work all day. Practice, go to practice in the afternoon, like right here. McDonald's All-Americans, really good players, under the radar players. You know, it's a great opportunity.
Obviously, assistant coaches dream to be a head coach one day, and you wanna get that job. And some coaches don't take any job. So for you, why George Mason? Why George Mason? Why this time? Why this university? What made this first special for you to say, you know what, this is a job that I want at this point in time?
It's because it's not, it wasn't for me, it wasn't about becoming a head coach. It was about winning when I became a head coach, being a successful head coach, being a championship head coach. And I think that all the infrastructure for that is here at George Mason. Obviously, an evidence of the banners, championships, Final Four, it's plainly obvious that the infrastructure here to have success as a head coach.
Now, obviously you mentioned briefly in the press conference about your staff and what you're trying to assemble. For you, where are you at as far as putting together your staff? You mentioned obviously Coach Thomason, but what exactly are you looking for in the staff that you're trying to assemble here?
Yeah, I'm gonna hire Dennis Felton as an assistant coach. He's the head coach at West Kentucky, head coach at Georgia, head coach at Cleveland State, spent time in the NBA with the San Antonio Spurs, assistant coach at Providence, assistant coach at Clemson. Very sharp basketball mind, very sharp defensive basketball coach, communicator. I worked with him at Tulsa. I have one spot that I want to hire someone from the area, someone that knows this area intimately and is connected to all programs, that is accepted and welcomed in all programs, that knows our guys. Our guys respect, it's really important to me. And that's where I am on the three assistant coaches.
Obviously, you mentioned a little bit, you know, Davidson and your presser. You know, the A-10 is a multi-bid league, obviously with your VCU, your St. Bonaventure, St. Louis, et cetera. How do you expect to get this program up to that level of those programs where you're competing for at-large bids, you know, year in and year out?
Culture, our recruiting, and our scheduling. Like, that's how. And we will. We're so locked into our culture, the way we play. You know, really getting buy-in on our identity. Again, that stuff will take care of itself. Like, I'm not laser focused on those guys. I'm so laser focused on the level that we are competing every day. How much are we getting better every day? And that when we step on the court, no matter who it's against, if it's against the top team in the A-10, if it's against some team, a Division III team, or if it's against the top team in the ACC, Big East, or Pac-12. Our standard is our standard. What we do, what we focus on, we're gonna do every single day. And the winning will take care of itself.
Obviously, as three, you know, black men sitting here today, a lot has been said about, you know, black coaches getting opportunities. We've seen a lot of the openings. Obviously, you know, Coach Grant at BC.
10 out of the 15.
10 out of 15 has gone to black coaches. So, you know, for you, what does that mean, you know, for you to be able to get this opportunity? And what does that say to, you know, the black coach that might be trying to get to where you are, you know, down the line?
I would say that I have great responsibility right now, and it is a great responsibility that I don't take lightly. And I'm going to succeed. I'm going to succeed because of the people that are around me, the people that have helped lift me up to get me to this point. And I'm into helping coaches of all races and persuasions. But any young man that looks like me, that comes from where I come from, player, coach, anything, administrator, I'm gonna give him everything that I can because someone gave it to me.
Thank you for your time, Coach. Extremely grateful you taking the time out to talk to us. And we're gonna be rooting for you guys, obviously, as black coaches and as DMV guys, for you to do well here.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man. All facts.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Yes, sir.
All righty, guys. That was Kim English, man. I mean, what a guy, man. I think, you know, as a DMV guy, you know, as a local guy that's, you know, grew up watching George Mason, I was 10 years old, or actually I was 9 years old, going on 10, when they went to that Final Four run. I can remember it vividly. I'm excited for George Mason, man. I think Coach English is going to do a great job there, man. Just listening to him speak today at the press conference and just, you know, hearing his plan for the program, hearing his poise, his charisma, his energy, you could tell that he has the chops to turn that program around, man. And obviously, you know, his pedigree, his resume speaks for itself. I mean, from his playing career, he's a young, so he can still relate to guys. And look out, guys, because I think George Mason is going to be a player in the A-10 sooner rather than later.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, I absolutely love the hire for George Mason, man. I think, you know, kudos to them. For going out on a limb, man, and you know, hiring a guy that's only been a assistant coach for 6 years. You know what I mean? There's guys that, you know, spend their whole lives trying to get their first head coaching gig, man. And for him, you know, he did a little 2-2-2 deal, 2 years at Tulsa, two at Colorado, and two at Tennessee. And now he's the head coach, man. So I think, you know, just kudos to Brad Edwards, man, the AD at George Mason, man, for going out on a limb and hiring Kim English, who by all accounts is a star, man. I mean, I haven't heard a bad word about Kim English yet, from former players to coaches to people that have spoken to him, man. I mean, everybody loves this guy. He has a great command. He has a great aura around him when you speak to him. Having the opportunity to speak to him today, I definitely, you know, could tell he's extremely intelligent. One thing that I love that he said during his press conference, man, and, you know, I think one thing, you know, when you're into the media stuff, you know, the thing that I've noticed about a lot of coaches that win is that you hear them talk about the process, you know, and they don't. One thing that came into today was when he was at Missouri and they were, you know, having 31 seasons and they were winning all these games. They never talked about winning, you know. They never talked about, you know, winning 30 games. You know, obviously when we got the Quinnipiac, they could only be said that when they were at Villanova, they never talked about, you know, winning national championships. They just talked about, how can they, like, how do you win games? How do you be the best version of yourself each and every day? You know, chin loose balls, jump stopping on 2 feet, you know, anything, man. Just the minute details, being places on time, you know, doing what you do, do what we do, have a culture, have an identity about yourself, and go about that. And that is what leads to wins. And so I really like Kim English and the way that he handled himself in the press conference today, man. He's an incredibly bright young man, or young adult. And I think he's going to be the perfect person to get this George Mason program back to where it needs to be sooner rather than later.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's crazy because as you guys just heard in the interview, you know, I asked Coach about, you know, how is he going to strengthen the recruiting ties and the programs and, you know, like the Mathers and, you know, the team takeovers and getting into WCAC and getting these local kids to stay home. And literally, man, I drive all the way back from, you know, from Fairfax, Virginia to Baltimore. It was quite the drive. It was about an hour and a half today because of traffic. And literally, man, before I could even get in my house and take my clothes off, I went on Twitter and I see, you know, Kim English has offered a 4-star kid out of the Mathen and Tyrell Ward to George Mason. Before I could even get home, he's already in DeMatha, you know, offering a kid a scholarship, you know, who's one of the best local prospects that there is. And I think that just shows what his work ethic is, what his mentality is. He's going to recruit this area. He's going to get kids to stay home. And quite frankly, man, he's going to get some kids that don't belong in the A-10 to come there. I mean, he already mentioned at the press conference that he was talking to guys from the Pac-12 and the Big Ten and the ACC about coming to George Mason and playing. You know, and as we know, man, times are changing. You know, you have to be able to get kids to want to stay in your program. You know, it's harder, you know, easier said than done. But you're also going to have to, you know, take the egg muscleman pass sometimes and get transfers to come into your program. Obviously, Texas Tech went to the national championship a few years ago with two grad transfers in their starting five. You know, you're going to have to be able to get guys to come to your program as well. It seems like he's hitting the ground running on both of those levels. So I don't know, man. A-10 definitely has to watch out, man. I think that George Mason is going to be a force to be reckoned with in the near future.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, look, Brad Edwards said he expects his program to be a top five team in the A-10. I mean, he said that's the expectation, you know, for George Mason. He thinks that they have the resources, the talent, you know, and they have everything that they need in place. And now they have their head coach, you know. So I think the future is definitely looking bright at George Mason, man. I think obviously the A-10 is a league that you can have success in if you get the right guy, get the right talent, man. So I think George Mason definitely on the up and up. And I'm excited to see where they go, man. I'm excited to get to Eagle Bank Arena next year. Hopefully we can have, you know, some more fans in there, and, you know, hopefully we can go in and cover some games. Hopefully, you know, learn more about Coach English and the program that he's trying to build over there.
Now, for sure, man, might have to, you know, get to a practice too, man, see what those guys are doing over there, man. That should be fun. You know, but, guys, that is going to be a wrap for this episode. It was tons of fun, man. Stay tuned to your TVs. This weekend, the NCAA tournament is going to be back with second weekend action with the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. We'll see if we still have some mid-majors that are going to be dancing for next week's episode. Stay tuned with us. As always, like this podcast, you know, give it a share, you know, tell a friend, subscribe, you know, it goes a long, long way. And make sure you guys are following us on Twitter at All Facts Media, on Instagram at All Facts Media. Check out our YouTube channel. We just uploaded a lot of old videos up there. You know, some content that you guys may have missed, some off-season interviews and things like that. So, you know, wherever we have content, man, make sure you guys are engaging with us. We definitely appreciate you guys, man. And we're going to let Pull Up Tay take us out, guys. Until next time. Yeah. You beating on me? It's time to get a check, boy. You want a sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You beating on me? What's the topic of discussion? What we talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take your last shot. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy.